A very good afternoon to you all, and it's very pleasing to see how many people are already standing at the microphones. We will be using all four, so take your pick. And we're going to start this open debate on assisted dying with a presentation by Anne Somerville, the head of the Ethics Secretariat of the BMA. Over to you, Anne.
Right. Thank you, Chairman. You have a written briefing paper on assisted dying, and on the website you can also see the BMA's evidence to Lord Joffe's recent select committee. This says that the BMA is strongly opposed to the legalisation of any form of assisted dying. It reflects 1997 ARM policy, which recognised a wide spectrum of views within the profession, but opposed any legal change on assisted dying for the time being. That view was echoed in 2000 when the RB again agreed that physician-assisted dying should not be legalised. In 2003, it noted grassroots opposition to euthanasia. So, current BMA policy is clear. My job, however, is to flag up some public policy questions which are likely to arise, on which the BMA's views are somewhat less clear. For example, the Home Office is conducting a major review of the law on murder. Our most senior judge, Lord Wolfe, is arguing for a lesser penalty for mercy killing. The BMA may want to respond to this consultation, but do we have a clear policy? Is it covered, for example, by the no legal change for the time being resolution of 1997? New assisted dying bills are expected this autumn in the Lords and the Scottish Parliament. Discussions will focus on patients' rights, on doctors' ethics, on safeguards for the vulnerable, and on the need for palliative care to be more available to terminally ill patients, regardless of whether there is any other legislative change. Questions will arise about definitions and terminologies, including the difference, if any, between assisted suicide, physician-assisted suicide, and euthanasia. To many people, this is going to sound like counting angels on pinheads, but actually it has far-reaching consequences. This is partly because the focus in the assisted dying debates has shifted. It's shifted away from proposals for doctor-administered euthanasia towards models which emphasize patients controlling their own dying process. This trend may be partly about safeguards. It may be partly about patient rights. But when we talk about patient rights, remember that the European Court of Human Rights dismissed Diane Pretty's claim that her husband ought to be able to help her commit suicide in 2002. Whatever the reason, both Lord Joffe in England and SNP Jeremy Purvis in Scotland have looked more towards the 1994 Oregon law on assisted suicide and turn their backs on the Dutch model of euthanasia, which has been consistently criticised for insufficient safeguards. So what exactly can Oregon doctors do? They can write but not administer lethal prescriptions for patients who meet the legal criteria. Whether to use the drug once the prescription is written is entirely up to the patient. In 2003, for example, 67 lethal prescriptions were issued in Oregon, and 39 patients used that lethal prescription, ingested the drug, and died as a consequence. 28 patients who also had the prescription did not use it. 18 of them died eventually of their illness without ever using the drug, and 10 were still alive at the end of the year when the auditing process came to an end. The Oregon Medical Association says that this gives patients more and doctors less responsibility. A key question for Parliament here will be whether or not the BMA agrees with that. Also, whether the BMA would continue to oppose assisted suicide if people other than doctors took over some of the responsibilities. Lord Joffe's last bill referred throughout to the role taken by registered medical practitioners, but his next bill, this autumn, may not necessarily have the same format. His committee reports point out that not all countries that practice assisted dying rely on doctors to carry it out. And this resonates with a survey carried out a few years ago, which compared the attitudes of different health professionals to assisted dying. It indicated that if it were legalized, pharmacists, for example, would be far more willing to consider assisting suicides than either GPs or hospital doctors. The authors of the survey suggested that changing professional status may have something to do with that, and that also has implications we might want to consider. Current BMA policy opposes euthanasia and assisted suicide on precisely the same grounds. We don't distinguish between them. In the face of Lord Joffe's bill and Jeremy Purvis's attempts in Scotland to change the law, we have argued that both euthanasia and assisted suicide raise exactly the same anxieties. They raise anxieties about the focus and purpose of medicine, about the nature of the doctor-patient relationship, and about the vulnerability of dying patients. So although we don't distinguish, we need to note, as highlighted in the briefing paper, that doctors and lawmakers in some other jurisdictions do say that there is a great difference between euthanasia and assisted suicide. Lord Joffe has urged Parliament, and he has also urged the BMA, to consider if there is a significant moral and practical difference between euthanasia and assisted suicide. And if so, if the BMA thinks there is a difference, what would be the implications for doctors and for patients? I have mentioned Lord Joffe a lot because he intends to introduce a new bill very shortly. He has also said that he will take account of your debate today in revising his bill on assisted dying for the terminally ill. The challenge now for the BMA is to clarify any areas of consensus that we can identify in this very polarised debate. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. We're going to crack on as quick as we can. Judging by the number of people standing, you've only got about 45 seconds each. The one thing I would remind you of when you're speaking, do not speak directly to any motion that you may have submitted or others have. We're looking for points on the general issue, and we'll then be trying to put together, as best we can, a consensus statement to vote on Thursday. We'll go around the microphones in order, starting with microphone one. Please tell us who you are before you make your point.
My name's Greg Gardner. I'm a GP from Birmingham. I'd like to make some points about Oregon, as this has been raised by Anne Somerville. First point is about assisted suicide has really nothing to do with pain relief. In Oregon since 1998, there hasn't been a single case where a patient has asked for assisted suicide because of intractable pain. Most patients in Oregon who have requested assisted suicide have done so because of fear. Fear of becoming a burden, fear of losing autonomy, or simply because they are depressed. On the subject of pain, there is quite good evidence that the quality of pain control among terminally ill patients has actually gone down in Oregon in the last few years. A substantive study in the Journal of Palliative Medicine published last year indicated that was indeed the case.